This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:16 in the evening with Lynn and Kelvin, and we're talking about regulations to protect people who are working in the gig economy. This is something that is going to happen soon. I think the government has announced that they're looking into it. They've also said that they're setting up a task force. And so I think we can expect a proper announcement pretty soon. But since we don't have that yet, we're just kind of taking a wish list. We'd like to know, what would you like to see? What do you think would help to protect the welfare of people who are within the gig economy, especially if you yourself is someone who's working in that space? Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Now we have on the line Lawrence Todd, Head of Research and Development at IDEAS. Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us this evening. If you were trying to set out a policy to regulate the gig economy, where would you begin?
So look, I mean, I think the important thing is to really go back to basics and start from the bottom and work back up. And what I mean by that is to really take a step back and look at how technology has disrupted what are, you know, a range of traditional industries, and how we want to achieve our fundamental policy objectives in light of that, rather than, for example, trying to, you know, take Grab and trying to say, well, it's really a transport company, so we just need to make it fit in the regulations that we have for transport companies, or Foodpanda is an F&B company, so we need to make it fit in that. You know, actually, we need to take a step back and think, okay, what objectives do we actually want to achieve with the regulation, and how has technology changed the landscape, and how do we respond to that? So I think it's about taking that broader perspective rather than trying to sort of crowbar in these new business models into existing frameworks.
Right. And, you know, ideally then, what do you think these regulations should attempt to address?
Well, look, I mean, I think at the end of the day, what you want to be doing is promoting innovation among businesses, creating job opportunities, promoting choice for consumers, and lowering prices for consumers as well. So at the end of the day, those are sort of the upsides you want to be supporting with your regulatory framework. And then on the downside, you want to minimize the risk of a monopoly emerging. You want to avoid the risk of abuse of workers or unfair practices. And you certainly want to avoid any risk of sort of the ripping off of consumers and so on. So you have to take a step and think about, okay, well, how do we achieve those? How do we kind of make sure that we capitalize on those positives whilst minimizing those downside risks in our framework?
So there's also been some pushback in terms of people saying that the government shouldn't meddle with how a company is run. And this is really in relation to Foodpanda. There's the position that the government could just be a mediator between the employer and employees. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing to say is that, you know, I think the issue is that the government shouldn't intervene and sort of pass judgment on the decisions of individual companies. I think the point should be that the government sets the rules of the game for everybody and doesn't get involved in sort of individual cases. So I think it's important that, you know, the cases that come up in the news might well raise legitimate questions about how we want to regulate parts of our economy. And that's right for the government to respond to that. But where I think it gets a bit problematic is where the government starts issuing specific directions to companies that are not, you know, it's not saying this company has broken the law. It's just saying we don't agree with what this company did. So I think that's problematic. I mean, the second part of your question, I mean, I actually also don't think the government should play the role of mediator in the case of individual disputes, because really the government is there to set the rules. I mean, if there's a dispute to be mediated, I mean, ultimately that should play out in the court, where it can be determined whether either side of a dispute has acted outside of the law as set down by the government. So I think it's about being clear, you know, who has what role. And here the government's role is set the rules of the game, take that broad perspective of building a marketplace that, you know, promotes innovation among companies, you know, creates jobs among workers, lowers prices for consumers, and, you know, avoids downside risks of monopolies and abuses and so on, not getting involved in individual cases.
So we've also seen in the news, you know, really there's a conflict between what employers want versus what employees are asking for. How do you balance between the two?
Yeah, look, I think that's really central to all of this. I mean, clearly one of the big challenges in the gig economy is the questions it poses from a labour market perspective. So obviously from the perspective of workers, you know, there's this one big benefit, which is flexibility. And we know a lot of people really value that. You know, the very, very low barriers to entry to get in and start earning money in some of these new industries. On the other hand, you know, the downside of that is, you know, a lack of security. And I think then we have to break that down a bit. So for me, I think there are two issues. So one of them is a, you know, workplace rights issue, which is, you know, to what extent should, you know, companies in the gig economy extend, you know, traditional workplace rights like sick leave or maternity leave, so on, to their, you know, well, they would say contractors or employees. And I think that's one challenge. I think the other challenge is more, what, you know, a sort of, let's say, like a social security welfare argument, which is that, you know, is there enough financial security for people who get drawn into the gig economy and then there's no kind of part of that allows them to save towards a pension and so on. So it creates a longer term risk of, you know, a longer term financial risk for them individually. So I think these are slightly separate questions that we have to address separately. So I've seen there are some quite innovative ideas going around about how to make sure that, you know, being involved in the gig economy doesn't kind of compromise your long-term financial security. I think on the workplace right, I think there's more work to be done, I think.
So one of our long-term goals in Malaysia is to become a high-income nation with that wealth distributed quite well. Does the gig economy contribute to that goal? And is there any way to make the gig economy a bigger part of this objective?
Okay, well, I would say a couple of things. I think, look, the gig economy is not going to be a major, you know, driver of taking Malaysia towards high-income nation status. But it is an important source of supplementary income for a lot of young people, and that can be a kind of crucial tiding over until people find more long-term job opportunities or start businesses of their own. So I think, you know, that's, you know, a really important aspect of it. I think the other thing is that, you know, we focus quite a lot on Grab and Foodpanda and, you know, those parts of the gig economy which rely on, you know, kind of lower skilled input. But actually the gig economy applies in lots of other areas too. And there's definitely going to be growth in the future of trading of high-end services via these kind of platforms. And actually that is quite an important part of kind of getting to be a high-income nation, which is how do you modernize your labor market? How do you create markets that allow people access to, you know, the best services and able to sell their services really easily. So I think, you know, it is important to get the gig economy right from the perspective of achieving high income status.
And Lawrence, I think maybe it's just budget season, but I've just had tax on the brain recently. Can the government benefit from taxing the gig sector?
Well, look, I mean, I think clearly the tax is part of this discussion. I think for me, probably the tax discussion becomes more a broader discussion about tax in the digital economy, because a lot of these big service providers platforms are based outside of Malaysia, and therefore there's discussion about, you know, to what extent are their activities in Malaysia taxable. That's actually a bigger global discussion that I think needs to be agreed at a global level, because these companies will say, well, we are being taxed, but we're being taxed in the countries we're based in. So if Malaysia taxes us too, then that's double taxation. And so I think actually the question is, how do we negotiate with other countries to make sure tax rights of the digital economy are allocated fairly? So that's something that has to happen at an international level. And there is a process ongoing that I think is due to report next year on that. But I think that's the process that needs to be engaged with, rather than sort of trying to do something else in the short term.
Lawrence, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Lawrence Todd, Head of Research and Development at IDEAS. And we're just discussing the possibility that soon we're going to see some regulations coming from the government in order to protect the welfare of people working in the gig economy. And we've been asking you for your thoughts, because early days yet, which means that it's wish list time. Mm-hmm. You can call us and let us know what you think. 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Robert Alberto on Twitter saying, how different is the gig economy from freelancing? I mean, if you regulate the gig economy, how is that going to impact freelancers? Isn't it the same condition? And I think off the top of my head, first things first, there is no sort of freelance association or a central company that all freelancers work with. And so, but with the gig economy, you're actually dealing with really large corporations. So I think when it comes to the regulations, they'll be kicking in at a corporation level, not at the level of the workers, not at the level of the employees.
Yeah, and I think the difference there is also that you are sort of, your job is sort of tied in with one company for a very, very long time, if not, you know, possibly for a lifetime, right? What we're seeing right now with the gig economy, gig workers specifically, is that they tend to have these very long drawn out careers essentially with just one company as opposed to moving in between.
Yeah. So on that note, I mean, Munif Malik is saying the word gig is basically slang for a job done at only a certain period of time. I mean, the economy exists precisely because of its dynamic and temporary nature. Anchoring it down with potentially burdening policies towards the employers would just make it, you know, not a gig economy. It becomes a typical business then, minus the benefits that a pure gig would bring. Personally, I feel an individual who depends on these jobs as their sole source of income have bigger underlying personal issues to deal with. Want security? Get an education or a permanent job. No one is holding anyone at gunpoint to be a part of this gig economy. So baffled with all the fuss, just my two cents. And that came from Munif Malik.
Well, you know, I think that is often the promise, right? That no one is forcing you to work in these jobs. And I get it, right? The point and the very nature of these jobs is supposed to be the fact that they're just part-time while you perhaps transition in between jobs, or perhaps you want to move into a different career altogether, that you have some supplementary income. But because at the moment and at this point, it is jobs that don't require high skills that you are sort of stuck with, and gig economy tends to benefit those who may have better education, better skills, better social protection, so they have better income supporting them, right? And it really leaves out and makes people who are vulnerable even more vulnerable.
Yeah, so I think that that's a pretty common thought, right? The idea that if you don't want to be part of the gig economy, you don't have to be. And that's actually very fair.
Yeah, it is.
But like what you were saying, it's an accessible job to have at a point where perhaps permanent employment is in short supply. So for the people who are doing it as supplementary income, I think, which is where you were getting at, right? Like,
yes.
When it's supplementary income, it's like, yeah, right. But when it's your full-time gig, I think then it becomes a little bit harder to do without it. It becomes a little bit harder to move on as well, because as we've heard and as we've seen, I think, partly from some of the very dangerous behavior we see on the roads these days, time is of the essence. I mean, clearly you need to make a certain amount of deliveries and you need to be making a very specific use of time. And I think that doesn't allow you maybe the space to consider other options or to go for job interviews or to do things, because everything is thought of in terms of this is a, it's a missed opportunity in that moment.
Yeah, with full-time jobs, it's the fact that you get paid to take breaks, you know, that you have that benefit. But with a gig-like job, when you take a break, you are losing money every minute.
And yeah, keep those thoughts coming. I mean, we're going to be continuing this conversation as well as discussing the somewhat related issue of pensions after this. So we also want to know, actually, right now, are you relying on a government pension or do you have your own retirement plans? We are going to be discussing that in a bit more detail after this. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.